You are listening to On Further Review.
On Further Review is a conversation that uncovers the fascinating details of the most remarkable sporting events. Events you grew up watching and maybe a couple you've never heard of before.
Join our discussion of upsets, dynasties, and how one event can be the difference between being a footnote and being a legend. This is On Further Review.
So we are launching the next sports review here on what I think is probably the greatest college football game ever played.
It's incredible.
If it's not the greatest, it's at least in the top one of the greatest games ever played.
Top one. So it's up there.
When you look at it, it's one of the greatest games ever played.
Yeah.
We're talking about USC versus Texas. This past couple of weeks, I went back and watched the game, and it immediately transported me back to 13, 14-year-old me sitting in the living room, being able to stay up late. And I think there was something about that game, like where we knew that was going to be a great game. But there's something about the game, even at 13 years old, I knew I was watching greatness.
Yep.
We
were sitting in the living room with the lights off. I think everybody had gone to bed. I think it was you. If I remember correctly, it was you, me, and one of our other brothers, maybe two of them. Shout out to Nate Keenan. I think it was one of them. I think it was maybe Keenan, but I can't recall. Maybe Nate was sitting there too. I remember sitting in the light of the TV screen, soaking this all in. And I agree. As far as in my lifetime, this one, I think that the Bama Georgia overtime national, because this is a national championship game too, so that has even higher stakes, right? I think this one and then that Georgia Bama one is probably like the two craziest bowl games / national championships I've had in my lifetime. And like you said, just you knew USC enters on a 34 game win streak. Texas enters on a 19 game win streak. Like both teams, you knew this was going to be a fist fight. And it's one of those, it's seemingly rare occasions where a national championship in college football paid out what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah. That entire year, USC was kind of hyped up and deservedly so of being this greatest of all times team, right?
Yeah.
And so you had this, you know, greatest of all time type of team. You have a 34 game win streak coming into this, in this particular game. But it seemed like just, you know, the year prior when they won their second championship, I think it was the Orange Bowl over Oklahoma.
Yeah.
They just rolled over every team. There was just no stopping them. And then this year they kind of got close, but it seemed like they just couldn't lose. They could not lose no matter what.
It had that feeling of the team that could turn it on, right? I think, you know, in modern history, we felt that way about the Kansas City Chiefs, 5 or 6 comebacks this year prior to the national championship, USC that is. Not like great deficits, but comebacks nonetheless. And it was just kind of this team that was like, when they decide to turn it on in the second half, they can, like, they were unbeatable. Obviously, 34 game win streak, unbeatable, you know?
Yeah. And really they set up as the best team ever. You know, the comparisons were against all the other great teams of the past years.
Yeah.
And so set up as the best team ever. They come into this game with two Heisman Trophy candidate winners in the back of their backfield and Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart.
Yep.
But just, you know, really loaded with talent. So just, you know, seemingly coming to this game, and they really rose to fame out of nowhere from USC after Pete Carroll took over a couple of years prior to that. They beat Michigan in the Rose Bowl in 2003, I think it was. 04, maybe 04, and then 05, they beat Oklahoma. Now in 06, they face University of Texas.
Yeah, so they were kind of going for the three-peat of the Rose Bowl here.
Yeah, or the three-peat of the national championship.
Or the championship, rather.
Yeah, but there was two things that I think kind of tell the story, the pregame story of how we got here. What do you remember about there's the two games I'm thinking of is USC-Notre Dame and Ohio State versus Texas.
Yeah.
What do you remember about Ohio State versus Texas in that first game?
Yeah, and Texas was coming in. I think the idea for Texas this year was that they were going to run the Big 12, which was pretty stacked, pretty deep as usual, one of the better conferences. You know, obviously this was on the back of Vince Young, and it was going to be Vince Young's, you know, Heisman type year, and he had that type of year, obviously undefeated. They kind of roll through, but that early game test that you alluded to, where they went, I believe they went up to the Shoe. Against Ohio State, who was also loaded that year.
Oh my gosh.
They had so many. I think that was a Troy Smith year, if I'm remembering correctly. I just remember that linebacking core of Bobby Carpenter, AJ Hawk, and James Laurinaitis. Just that defense was incredible. And they went up there and kind of had a dogfight with Ohio State. I think it was to start the year. They might have each had one warm-up game. I can't recall, but
yeah.
But pretty early in the season. And that cemented Texas in that upper echelon. USC coming off of the previous national championship, obviously as the favorite, riding this huge game, you know, this win streak. But Texas mm-hmm. keeping that win streak intact, even with the likes of a kind of exhibition type pseudo playoff matchup against a top team in Ohio State, to have that win on the road was incredible for them, you know, to have that anchor point to start the season. And I think the thing that stood out to me about that game or leading up to this was Vince Young was all the rage. Vince Young was all the talk for correctly so for good
yeah.
reason.
Yeah.
I mean, this yeah. national championship Rose Bowl between USC and Texas features the top three Heisman vote getters in Leinart, Bush mm-hmm. and Young. But, you know, that offense was incredible. But the defense to me of Texas, specifically in that Ohio State game and then all year long, was kind of what was lying in the weeds for this Texas team, maybe not talked as much about as Vince Young and the explosive offense that he brought, was how stout that defense was for Texas. And that's something that they just always were able to rely on this entire season through, you know?
Yeah, they had a defense that just kind of took advantage of opportunities. So I watched the tape of the Ohio State-Texas game of the USC Texas game. The defense doesn't jump off the page at you, but they're very opportunistic, where they were taking advantage of a late fourth down attack.
Yeah.
And then it's interesting too to think about, you know, what would have happened if Ohio State won, if they held on to beat Texas, about what that matchup could have looked like with Ohio State versus USC, and just the defensive, you know, firepower on Ohio State versus offensive firepower on USC.
Yeah.
An interesting matchup. Texas wins on a late touchdown pass from Vince Young to Lima Swede.
Yeah.
The other one that's interesting to me too, and is in the lead up to this game, is USC versus Notre Dame. And again, mm-hmm. Notre Dame was quarterbacked by Brady Quinn. They had this wonderful pitcher named Jeff Smarja.
Oh, that's right.
Filling in as their tight end.
That was a good Notre Dame team too.
That was a really good Notre Dame team.
That was good Notre Dame team.
Yep. So, and then that culminated with the infamous Bush push play, basically after time expired, play before.
Yeah.
Really the drive before. That was, you know, going back and watching that final drive that Matt Leinart engineered, to come, you know, to march his team down. I think he converted a 4th and 9 to his wide out there.
Yeah.
Just an incredible, incredible amount of guts and grit to get the field, you know, all the way down to the field. Leinart rolled out to the left and dove for the pylon. The ball wound up going out of bounds. And then, you know, they thought the game was over. Then they realized, you know, a couple more seconds left in the clock. And he gets the ball and he's thinking of spiking it to get, you know, drop a play, whatever, but instead he tells Bush, hey, I think I'm gonna go for it. Bush says, hey, I got you. And he goes and, you know, really makes a bad play, really, to be honest with you. It's a bad, you know, it was a bad call.
And at the time, not a legal play to push that's why, you know, like you said, it's known as the push. It was not legal at the time to advance a player in the offense like that. It is now today, obviously, but technically something they kind of got away with. And I'm sorry, Notre Dame fans, because you're probably still hurting from that one. You know, they had the stop there. It's interesting. We have these matchups, you know, earlier in the year at the end of the BCS or end of the year that year. I mean, Ohio State and Notre Dame still finish. I think it's 4 and 6 respectively at the BCS standings. Like, these were good teams all year long that these two had faced as opponents. It's funny. I actually just heard an interview from Matt Leinart was on, I think last week or week before, where he references he has that like painting put up into his office of, it's like a still painting, kind of like an oil painting. It's kind of cool. He had shown it of Bush with his two hands on the back of him at that line of scrimmage, which was just incredible. But you have that, like, you have that to keep them going. Otherwise, we never have this matchup. Otherwise, maybe we are looking at an Ohio State or a Notre Dame getting in there instead. But these two teams, kind of like you said about Texas's defense, I feel the same way about USC this year. They were both resilient, but they were both opportunistic and did enough to win games. And legally or not getting called for a bush. It's always funny.
I mean, to be honest with you too, like the play should have been illegal in the first place. I mean, it's a stupid rule to have in the rule books.
Right.
And so I have zero problem with USC
with it being allowed. Right.
With them being allowed to win that way. I'm 100% for it. They deserve to win that game. That was a phenomenal play.
Yeah.
If they had called a ticky tack foul on that and, you know, decide the outcome of the game because of that, that's,
yep.
I'm 100% for that play being allowable. I'm not a Notre Dame fan, so maybe it's different. I also don't like USC either, so I don't know.
Right, they were the lead candidate here this year. So I mean, they were a dynasty at this time in the 2000s. You know, USC, like you said, under Pete Carroll. It's funny watching it back through. My first thought when I the game on for this game here, 2006 Rose Bowl, mm-hmm. was I was like, man, Pete Carroll was old in 2006.
I know, but somehow he is crazy. Not aged a day.
It's crazy. That gum that he chews, man. I don't know what's in that.
Must be.
But just these heavy hitter games. This year is kind of special to me. Maybe it's like you said, that stage in life of young teen type of years of just really getting into football and really it kind of being a lifeblood for me or for you or for sports fans. But this, mm-hmm. I mean, I think Notre Dame also played Ohio State this year, if I recall correctly. Maybe it was the following year, but there were just these upper level teams where it seemed like they could go toe to toe with each other. I miss that a little bit in college football. I don't feel like you get that every year. But this year, where it's not just USC and not just Texas, like it's incredible enough to have two teams of this caliber in this game. But then to think of the teams they beat to get there and the caliber of teams like Notre Dame and Ohio State that year, this was a loaded college football year. And that's what makes this championship so incredible.
Exactly. And I was watching, watching some of the old highlights of USC for the years. And they are playing against Aaron Rodgers, Cal, right?
Yeah.
So you have just some phenomenal players in that 2005 or 2006 draft. Yep. All the so let's talk or about the
year
game
before. Marshawn, shout out, take care, y'all.
Oh yeah,
yeah. But this game and the crazy part about this to me is the win streaks: the 34 for USC, mm-hmm. the 19 for Texas. Because what I was getting to with the top level of college football programs this year. It's very incredible to me that two teams made it out undefeated to reach this game. Of all the years in college football, this is one where we should have had a one loss or even a two loss team at the top because of the strength at the top of leaderboard, as it were, but also because these teams played each other. And for USC to get through unscathed against Notre Dame and for Texas to get through unscathed against that Big 12 lineup, but specifically that Ohio State, as you mentioned, like USC and the Pac-12 too, for those two teams to get through both unscathed really set this up. And that's why it's so incredible that this game delivered.
Yeah. It's one of the, and they talk about it too, the pregame, they talk about this being one of the most hyped, anticipated college football games. So a lot of fanfare is coming to this. Quarterbacks have a combined, I think they're, say Leinart's like 37-1 in his career so far up to this point. And
Young had like Young two, is like
34
or two.
And two.
Yeah.
But he had won like 32 straight because he lost his first two games or something like that. Yep. Just these incredible win streaks. And obviously, you know, Reggie Bush is the year's Heisman Trophy winner too. And really just an absolute video game of a person, right?
Yeah.
This was like, you know, this, I remember these days, you know, NCAA football on EA Sports And he made it seem like he was just playing a video game out there. Just phenomenal athlete. And every time he got the football, something good was going to happen with the ball. Incredible to watch.
Yeah, he was electric. Every time he had the ball in open space, you kind of held your breath. You wanted to see what would happen with Bush. I feel the same way about Young too. Like Young, he could throw, and you know, his running ability in the open field too, just being such a big dude that could move so quick, kind of differing styles, but both electric players where you get him on the outside, or for Bush, it didn't even matter where he was on the field. I remember I think it was a punt return that he had against Fresno State where he covered almost every blade of grass on the field. It felt like his way to a touchdown, like just electric and an undying, energy that he would bring to each and every play. It was absolutely incredible.
And the
fanfare of this game, like going into it, we got Keith Jackson on the call. My gosh, if the granddaddy of them all, and just his voice coming, it's just the perfect setup. You got Will Ferrell doing a promo for USC, coupled side by side or shot by shot with Matthew McConaughey on Texas's side. Like, it's just the level of pomp and circumstance around this game is absolutely incredible before we even get to the events on the field.
Yeah, it's a hyped up game. And really, I mean, the game is an extension of the season. Keith Jackson, this is actually his final game as a play caller, and he goes out with one of the best of all, the best of all time.
Yeah. So yeah, and going in, like you said, I just wanted to touch on that real quick too. USC this was one of those games where it was like, if anybody could beat this USC team, let's see if it's Texas. Like, I think that was the general feeling going into this game of like, if anybody had a prayer to go and match up with this USC team to be able to withstand that offensive firepower, or at least match it shot for shot, this was the game where it was like, okay, This really felt like the number one versus number two. And we don't always get that, even though sometimes one plays two, we don't always get that. And this game had that feel even going into the start of it, of just like, okay, let's see what happens when USC gets to play Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. And to start things off, USC took control right away in the first quarter, right?
Yep.
They go, I think a three and out or close to three and out, but then Texas muffs the punt, and the guy who kind of rises right away to the top is Lendale White, their hard hitting running back. I forgot
who led the league in touchdowns that year, playing alongside. How
good he was, and just what a powerful running back that guy was.
Led the league in touchdowns, playing, I mean, tongue in cheek, complimentary football. I mean, they used him obviously a ton, but to the Heisman of Reggie Bush. Like, here's this Heisman Reggie Bush, and he's not even the leading scorer in his backfield.
Yeah, which again tells you how good USC is. That just tells you. I mean, Bush won the Heisman on a landslide. It wasn't even close. It just tells you just how good USC was for their, you know, Reggie Bush wins it. Lendale White's leading rusher. Matt Leinart finishes, I think, second or third in the Heisman vote, even though he won it the previous year too. Great offensive backfield. So USC marches down and scores. Texas really struggles the first quarter until one of the most boneheaded plays in all of sports.
Yeah.
The Reggie Bush toss.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first quarter, as you mentioned, that, you know, USC jumps out to that 7-0 score. Two quick notes from the first quarter, not to get in the weeds too much, but on Texas's first possession, they have fourth and second at midfield, and they go for it. They go for a fourth down. They fail to convert. USC then gets the ball. They decide to go for it on fourth and one from the Texas 16. And the crazy thing is they don't opt for the field goal at Texas's 16, instead go for it on fourth and one, also fail. So already in the first quarter, both teams going for it on fourth and short, just knowing like each possession matters. And then the second quarter starts. And as you're talking about, USC is once again moving the ball. This has the feel of like Texas isn't up for it. Bush takes a screen pass 35 yards. He's about to be tackled. And for some reason known only to Reggie Bush and God, he tries to lateral.
I don't think God knows that one. Don't blame God for that one. Even God's like, what the hell were you doing, bud?
right? He's like, I love this.
Got nothing, bud.
So he tries to toss it over to his teammate that's trailing and creates a, he's surrounded by two guys. They're down to the like 20 yard line of Texas.
Yeah.
And he decides that this trailing player is wide open, but for whatever reason, Reggie Bush just decides to do too much, tries the lateral to it, hits the guy in the foot, foul bounces around Texas.
It's a forward pass too. It's not even a proper lateral. It's a
right.
forward pass.
Like just the entire thing. It's funny, at halftime, they're interviewing Carroll and Brown, and Carroll goes, yeah, I don't know what Reggie was doing on that play.
He even
made mention of it even while trying to talk about his, you know, second half adjustments. What are your second half adjustments? Well, maybe we don't do that.
Yeah. Don't fumble the ball.
And that turnover leads to a Texas field goal. Mm-hmm. Granted, not like a huge thing, but USC was going in potentially with the way they were able to run the ball, looking to go up 14-0. Like, yeah. again, the ball's at the 20. They had plenty for the first down. If Bush just gets tackled there, there's no doubt in my mind that that USC scores and kind of extends that lead. But instead, switches a little bit of momentum, gets it Texas's way, kind of leads to a Texas field goal. And then the next possession, they go all the way down the field and wind up having an end zone pick by Texas against Leinart. And so it's just
a phenomenal pick.
Incredible catch in the corner there. Yep. And just get a foot in.
And he even mentioned too, I was watching the 05 documentary on this Texas season. And he even says like, yeah, I didn't think I was in.
Yeah.
I told everybody that I thought I was, but yeah.
Right.
And that's another thing too about this game here that I think needs to be mentioned. This, I think, is the first big game that's ever had instant replay. Because this, you know, the previous year, the Big Ten had instituted instant replay. This year, basically all the Power Five conference had adopted it. They had instant replay, but it wasn't a perfect system. They had issues with camera angles or getting things up. But this is kind of the first time instant replays come up. And there's a couple times here in this game where it solidified the outcome of the game. This interception would be one of them where, you know, they made the right, it enabled them to get the right call on the field.
Right. And back-to-back drives because they get that pick. Then Texas goes down and winds up scoring. So it switches from the first quarter, which feels like it's about to be USC up two scores, to Texas taking a lead 9-7 because they wind up missing the PAT.
Yeah.
Vince Young makes a lateral they get Liner to pick in the end zone. Then on the ensuing drive, Texas drive, Vince Young's knee is down
he's clearly down.
And because of the newness of instant replay, as you mentioned, the refs are not privy to the same camera angles that we see on the national broadcast. So they are unable to make the call to change from what had been called on the field.
Well, they can't change on the field. I mean, like, we don't have the camera angles.
Right.
How are you going to change it?
There's no way to. But it's just an odd situation of this new institution, as you rightly pointed out, of this new feature of instant replay. But the crazy part was we got to see it in better angles than the referees. So all fans are looking at this scene, Vince Young's knee clearly on the ground before the ball comes out of his hand.
Well, they didn't review it at all. I don't think they even reviewed that play.
I thought they took a quick time to the sideline, but
I don't think they reviewed it because if I remember correctly, they had difficulty getting the angles to even review the play at all.
So maybe I'm just thinking of how the broadcast played it over and over.
Yeah,
I was thinking that they
Texas ran out there and try to attempt the field goal and missed
that's
it,
even crazier. Wow.
Who cares? Yeah. So they couldn't even review it. They couldn't even get the angles to review it. But again, it's a phenomenal first half. Texas goes into the half. I think they're up 16-10 or something.
Yeah, 16-10 at half. Yep. After another Texas rushing touchdown and then a USC field goal right before half.
Yeah. So the first quarter is dominated by USC.
Yep.
But somehow they're able to sneak out a lead here going into halftime. This entire year, USC has been a second half team. They had this switch in the locker room. They could just turn on. And that's kind of what it felt like in the second half here.
Yeah, the third quarter, for sure. Yeah, for third quarter starts, Texas punts, and then USC goes down and scores. So really, aside from the liner pick and the Bush lateral, USC's driving down the field scoring. And they'd open that up, like you said, second half. They go up 17-16 with that touchdown. Texas gets a field goal on the next drive, but USC's defense did enough, obviously. Mm-hmm. Texas rather scores a touchdown.
Yep.
So they go back up 23-17. USC converts on a fourth and one. That is also a touchdown from Lendale White, his second. and they'd take the lead 24-23, you know, in that third quarter. So you do. In the first quarter felt like USC dominated both offensively in a good way, but also in the airs. The second quarter, Texas kind of punches back. And then I feel like the third quarter is a little bit of back and forth. Both teams' offenses really kind of have in their way.
Yeah, the first half was low scoring. All of a sudden, you have an offensive explosion this third quarter where it seems like neither team can stop the other one from scoring. This is why these teams are
1-2.
One and two, why they have the three, you know, Heisman Trophy candidates in their backfields and all the firepower that they had. They just, neither of them could stop each other in that third quarter.
Right. As
high scoring third quarter. Everybody seems like if you had a possession, you were scoring touchdowns. Again, it goes to your point about how valuable they saw these possessions as being, right?
Right.
It's because you really, you know, this is why they were going for it and fourth down in the first half. It's why these teams were being more aggressive, is because they knew at any point the switch could come on for any of these teams and you just have score after score after score. And so you really had to value those possessions.
Yeah.
And USC had to make up for some lost possessions because of the two turnovers in the first half as well.
Right.
Which they do. Talk about how good the Texas defense was. For USC to only be down 6 points after two turnovers is incredible.
And in the first half, there were three turnovers. It led to 16 points. I think 9 for Texas, 7 for USC with that muff punt. So, and a 16-10 game at half. So literally all but two possessions in the entire first half were scoring possessions. We're off at turnovers. Whereas in the third quarter, we just see the offense kind of overstep the defense, as you said. I mean, that end of the third quarter leads down. I think the fourth quarter exactly starts with a field goal try, a 31-yard field goal missed. I just want to point out every year, and this year is very much so the same, it feels like kickers, like this year, it just feels like, what's up with kickers? Kickers miss. Like to watch in live time, a guy miss a 31-yard field goal wide right, and that ends a Texas drive in the fourth quarter. USC follows it up with a 9-play, 80-yard touchdown drive. And so their offense is just rolling.
Yeah, it seems like they can't be stopped at all.
Right.
And going to the fourth quarter, I think about 6-7 minutes left in the fourth quarter. They're up two possessions. Let's say they're up 8 or 9 or something.
Well, I think it was 38-26 after Texas gets a field goal to make it 31-26. And then Leinart has a touchdown pass to go up 38-26 with just under 7.
Yeah. And at that point, it seems like that's your dagger moment right there. USC can't be stopped at all. There's really no
run out of time.
Run out of time. Only 6 minutes left. Texas has some firepower, but Texas isn't, you just kind of get the feeling that the game's over at that point, that they just went up two possessions, the game's over.
Yeah, it's a 12-point game, and so far in the second half, Texas has not been able to stop this USC offense, which is par for the course for USC, because in the second halves, as you alluded to, of this entire season and even the season before, nobody could stop USC.
Yeah.
Well, so Young has a touchdown on the next drive. That's right. A 17-yard rushing touchdown makes it 38-33, and that's almost exactly 4 minutes left in the game with USC getting the ball back.
So USC gets the ball back, I think within 2 minutes left, maybe under 3 minutes or some of that. And again, all you got to do is get a couple first downs, and that's it. Third and a couple. Linda White fumbles the ball. Actually, see falls.
Yeah, they recover it. Right.
Yeah. But USC loses some yardage. And then it sets up for that infamous 4th-and-1. So before we talk about the result of the play, what is your thoughts on the decision to run Lendell White there versus having Bush in the backfield? Do you second guess Pete Carroll's play calling there?
So I'll say this about the specifics of this drive. They make it out to the 50, as you alluded to. I remember feeling in this moment, and even on the rewatch, they need this first down. I think it's like 2:13 left. Texas has timeouts. I think they take one with 2:13 left on that set up, that fourth down play. So really USC gets the first down. They win the game. Pete Carroll and this entire game, even Mac Brown has shown, as we've talked about, that each possession matters and they're willing to go for it on fourth. Lendell White scored on a 4th-and-1 earlier in the game where Carroll decided to go for it instead of kicking the field goal. I don't have a problem with running Lendell White. I mean, it's easy in hindsight, I think, to say like, oh, he could have gone outside with Bush or something like that. But Lendell White's having a very good game. And And yeah. USC, especially in the second half, has been pushing around Texas's front. Like thinking back to us by the glow of the TV screen watching this in the living room, I remember feeling in that moment, oh shit, they're going to get it. Like I remember thinking the way that USC looked in that second half, that they, that this was the call. I will say this, the previous play, that third down, the Lendell White fumble, and then the recovery by USC where they kind of lose that yard. To me, that's the only thing that would have given me pause of going for it, was just that little bit of like, whoops, momentum change of the fumble. If it had just been a regular carry, honestly, if Lendell White doesn't fumble, it's like fourth and inches, you know, which then you could have probably had Bush push 2.0, you know. And it's interesting that they didn't run that, although I understand that too. But as far as the Lendell White play, Pete Carroll, and he's shown this for years to come since, is going to be aggressive. And if you give him the option to try to go win the game with a running attack like he had, I still think it's the right move. I mean, you're like a yard max away from next national championship and your three-peat and winning this dog fight with Texas. Obviously the execution didn't pan out USC.
Do you have any problem with Lendell White being the guy to get the ball versus Reggie Bush?
I don't, because in all honesty, in the rush game this game, or in the running attack this game, Lendell White was the hotter hand. Like he had been delivering more of the blows, and especially Bush had some activity in the passing game. His stats are fine this game. It's not like Texas shut him down, but Texas also had speed. The guys like Aaron Ross on the outside and stuff. Like, I don't know if bouncing it outside would have worked as well for Bush. You think with the electrifying aspect of him, that would be one thing. They were thunder and lightning for a reason. But I think on 4th and 1.5 with the game on the line, I don't have any problem. I wouldn't have had a problem with Bush on the outside either, but I don't have a problem at all with giving the ball to Lendell White.
No, I think it's right. I'm 100% with you. I think it's the right call.
I think in today's day, you would do a rollout with Leinart with options to Bush, or I think they had Dominic Boyd.
Yeah.
And I forget who else they had on the outside. So I think today's day and age, you might have called a different play call. But for the game, I have no problem with Lendell White.
Yeah. I also wonder, too, just whether or not the results of this play influenced the decision in the Super Bowl not to run it on 4th and 1.
Didn't even think of that.
And whether or not this is Marshawn Lynch can blame Lendell White not getting the first down for why he didn't catch the ball in that critical situation.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Damned and
to be fair to Pete Carroll, thank you. To be fair to him, he didn't throw the ball. Russell Wilson, and no one's blaming him for this, but here's a little tangent for y'all. Russell Wilson made a terrible read in throwing that ball. He should have never thrown the ball there. That was Russell Wilson's fault. Don't blame Pete Carroll because Russell Wilson made a bad decision.
Right. It still was a good, I would say in both of these situations, the one we're talking about, the one you're alluded to, I think Pete Carroll makes the right call. I really do.
Yeah.
Execution is different than it being the right call. Yeah. Like, it's easy to be the armchair quarterback and after the fact of a play not working, say, oh, that's the wrong play call. But this 4th and 1 give to Lendell White and that Russell Wilson non-pass throw were good calls.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a non-Packer player I don't think that I love as much as Marshawn Lynch. So I would have probably given him the ball. But again, to your point, it was not it's execution more than play call.
Mack Brown even mentioned that too in his 05 documentary. He mentioned the same thing too. Like, look, we hadn't stopped Lendell White all game long. He said,
right.
If I was Pete Carroll, I would have done the exact same thing. And we just, I guess his defense just said, look, we're going to all stack line of scrimmage. And if they throw it over the top and they catch it, we're gonna go up there and say good game. We're not gonna let Lendell White beat us right here. We're gonna clamp down on this 4th and 1, and they do it. And
the defensive line play on this play, if you go back and watch, the two must see plays are the Bush lateral in the second quarter and this play for sure in my book anyways.
Yep.
If you just watch, because they play it over and over. They show the replay over and over. Just watch the movement by the defensive line from the snap of the ball. They just jump faster than USC. And that's what derails this play. One guy goes low, one guy goes high. Like, it's perfect execution on the defensive side of it. So that's why I have no problem saying it's the right call. It's just Texas out executed them on that play.
They get this incredible stop. Remember, it's really been It's been almost a half of play since either team has stopped each other.
Yeah, you had aside from a Texas missed field goal, yeah.
First time USC's been stopped in the second half.
I don't think there's a punt in the second half.
I don't remember a punt in the second half either. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? The third quarter opened up on a Texas three and out and a punt. I think that's the only punt. And then we have a missed field goal and then the turnover on downs here.
So just incredible that they somehow magically get that stop. And again, it was leading up in this, watching the game. I remember I was going for Texas in the game. I think we were tired of USC.
Earmuffs to my Oklahoma fan. I was cheering on Young. I was done with Bush and Leinart.
Boys. They were the media darlings for the last 3 years. You just kind of got, you know, unless you were in Southern California, I think you just kind of got sick and tired of hearing about it the entire time. Right.
I get bored with excellence. I'm just being honest. They were really, really good. I get bored with dominance.
Maybe it was haters going to hate kind of thing, but you know, in all honesty, it was, I was going for Texas.
I was 17 years old. Leave me the fuck alone. That's petty.
You know, you felt the game was over at that for Arthur One, felt for sure they were going to get it, and somehow magically they stop it. And then Vince Young engineers the greatest college football drive, I think, in recent memory.
Yeah, because even
it's
with
certainly
the
greatest
stop,
I've ever seen in my entire life.
Right. Even with the stop, it's not done. Like, it's that was just to give yourselves a chance. Like, Texas's defensive stand at midfield was just to give their offense a chance. And so it still had work to be done. And Vince Young pretty much did all the work. Like, the execution of that final drive from offensive players like Young, or I think Jamal Charles has a reception. Mm-hmm. Both of them get out of bounds, so they get to keep their timeouts. There's a play that, like, there's a completion over the middle of the field that they wind up reviewing, which is kind of a pseudo timeout. It's an obvious he's down and then the ball comes up. They review it for a potential fumble. So Texas does get a break there with kind of a pseudo timeout, but they get down and USC stands tall and forces a fourth down play, fourth and five, as the incredible historical line from Keith Jackson, fourth and five at the nine, the national championship on the line. Like, just pure poetry from the guy.
Perfect. And it's got Keith Jackson for you.
Yeah, and his voice. Yeah. 30 seconds left. But for him to say that literally like 2 seconds before the ball is snapped, Young gets pressure, steps up in the pocket, bolts right, heads for the right corner of the end zone. The thing about great play calling, if I can just fanboy for a second about like some of these greats that call the games, like the Al Michaels, man, I'm gonna tear up when he's done. Like the Keith Jacksons, even the John Maddens, and like how funny that is. The Howard Cosells, these incredible legendary callers. Keith Jackson lets the play, like, he has that call, fourth and five at the nine, national championship on the line. The play snaps. He is almost radio silent, and all you hear is fan noise and watch the play unfold. And then he goes, Young to the corner of the end zone.
He's like, got it. He's
like,
got
he's
it.
Got
yeah.
It. That's what it was. Yeah. He's got it. Like, just the few amount of words that makes someone like Keith Jackson just an absolute legend. And obviously this play making Vince Young and this game an absolute legend for sure.
The play call in this game is fun to watch. And there's a couple guys I'm trying to think of this. Trying to get the guy's name on Fox, who kind of reminds me a little bit of who has that ability to kind of let the play develop.
Gus Johnson.
Yeah. Ugh. I feel like he's
great,
you know,
in his own right. But the play develops while still capturing the excitement, so that when he does actually say something, he's at like level 10 excitement level, but he's not building himself up there or revving himself up there. He's just letting the play call take place. And then he's responding with an exclamation point. That's what he's doing. Yep. And that's, Gus Johnson is one of my favorite to listen to.
I think he's one of my favorite current ones. He and he's for college sports. I think he's my favorite.
Yeah.
Guy to listen
yeah. Him.
To.
I miss him doing all the national or the March Madness games. Cause he's been on legendary calls for March Madness as well as college football. Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as Vince Young, you know, breaks the plan of the end zone, you feel like this is a response to the Heisman Trophy voting. I think at the end of the game, he runs around chanting, "Who's the Heisman now?" which is just love it. I love that type of response from Vince Young.
Yeah.
And if you think about it too, I think the Heisman voting might have been different if they had included this game in their voting. I think it might have had different results.
You see that from time to time since the Heisman comes out before the national championship plays. But there's no doubt. I mean, he's obviously the MVP of this Rose Bowl national championship. And I think with Reggie Bush having won the Heisman, if we can get into, you know, the aftermath of that, I think the aftermath of the Bush Heisman coupled with the aftermath of how this championship game ends, most people think back to 2006 as the Vince Young year.
Yeah. So Vince Young wins this. He wins the game for Texas. This is the greatest moment in Texas sports history. I would challenge anyone to find me a better moment.
Knocking off
the presumptive favorites to win the game, knocking off the two-time defending national champions, and in this manner, in this fashion, for Vince Young to really put his team on his back
willed them
to victory. Vince Young was clearly the best football player on the field in this game by a long shot.
Yep.
It wasn't even close.
He and the five guys in front of him, I think they keep him clean. I think there's no sacks. I in the rewatch, there's not many plays where he decides to run that he doesn't pick up yards at all. He really does. And one of my favorite things in all of sports, again, I'm not a dynasty guy. I'm a self-proclaimed non-dynasty guy. If you love dynasties, I get it. Like, greatness is awesome. To see that played over and over for USC and the talent that they had. But I love the 1 year, everything comes together, usually coupled with it riding on one guy saying, get on my back, type of seasons. And that's exactly what Vince Young had here for the University of Texas this year. You're right. He was the best player on that field, which is incredible considering who was on that field.
Yeah. Yeah, think like, of all the players who were on that field, and
as far as college football goes, like, just stacked with record holders, incredible school record holders, national record holders at the time. Like, it's incredible that out of all those players scattered all over the field, especially on USC side, that Vince Young is the best player, and it's undeniable watching this game.
Yeah, and you can make an argument for Reggie Bush being one of the best college football players of all time.
Yep.
You can make an argument for Matt Leinart being one of the best quarterbacks of all time, college football quarterbacks. But in this game, Vince Young was clearly the best player on the field. So
the
after
crazy
this
thing
game,
to me,
okay, go ahead.
Before you jump into that, the crazy thing to me, one last thing on this game was, and I tried to make a point to bring him up as we went through it, was the fourth down conversions, how important each possession was. But there were five fourth down conversions. USC converted one, a Lendell White touchdown. Texas converted one, a Vince Young touchdown to seal it. Like, these coaches took gambles because of the importance of the game, but it really only paid off in USC's favor once early in the game. And then obviously this iconic fourth down play of Young's touchdown. And then equally iconic fourth down stop of Texas at midfield to have this chance. So it's just interesting to me. Nowadays, we see a lot of the analytics people on fourth downs, you know, going for it, maybe more so. But in this day and age, to take those types of risks and really to not even have them pay out that much, but to still be willing to take them, in Texas's case, in that last drive, out of necessity, but even just out of, you know, realizing the magnitude of this game, is something that just stood out to me. Like, even from the first quarter on, it was like, we're going for it on fourth down, results be damned. And you see that with USC, obviously, at midfield, which is, again, going back to that real briefly, which is why I have no problem with them going for it, because that was the atmosphere of this game.
Yeah.
Were giving it all four plays.
You have a chance to win the game with your offense. I think you're going to want to take that chance.
Yep.
And they hadn't been stopped all game. So why not try it? I have no problem with this.
Right.
With that play call. I think it was the right call to make. I think USC, I think Pete Carroll makes that choice every time. I think he's done that throughout his career, and to some success too, being back-to-back national champions, being in three national championships in a row, really being 1 yard away from a three-peat.
Yep. We talk about the guys on the field, guys on Carroll's staff included Steve Sarkisian and a young man named Lane Kiffin. like some pretty big, you know, names nowadays. Texas, obviously, Steve Sarkisian's head coach now.
Oh yeah.
But it's crazy too, like the defensive struggle, or really the mistakes in the first half. And then, as we talked about, the second half, one punt, one turnover on downs. Besides that, no turnovers after the handful of them in the first half. So really just kind of a good old clean fun game of back and forth there. Texas coming out on top.
Yeah, and again, like I said in the beginning, this is the best college football game ever because of the hype, because of who, you know, the Hollywood boys versus the Texas kids, yep, and Vince Young versus Reggie Bush. All that goes.
Yeah, the level of play.
The level. Right. Yeah.
Right.
So unfortunately for USC, what happens after this game is they get sanctioned by the USC for their Reggie Bush bought his, I had some booster by his parents rent for a couple of years or something like that, and furnished the house, and that was a no-no by the, you know, wonderful NCAA.
Yes.
I guess they accused him of, you know, impropriety of some sort of, you know, improper dealings, which is, I don't know if there's a more corrupt organization than the NCAA, maybe like the Olympic Committee, but
yeah, I mean, FIFA and the Olympic Committee and the NCAA all kind of hang in that same area.
It's
also amazing to me that it leads to the removal of the Heisman for Bush and stuff like that too.
Vacating wins. So
as if those things impacted the actual outcomes of the field of play. I don't know. Like I'm probably too open with this idea. Now we have NIL and stuff. I just, to me, it's ridiculous. If there's not cheating in the field of play, to me, it's a little ridiculous to vacate wins and Heismans, which are the result of field of play, for stuff that happens outside of it.
I mean, he's clearly
feel that way.
Player that year. It's, you know, and those wins happen, and those, you know, those games were played, and for them to vacate those wins, I think it's just
because somebody else paid rent, you know, like it blows my mind. But it, as you mentioned it, it's the NCAA just trying to step in and assert authority, or some sort of like, you know, self-righteousness of stepping in and saying this is wrong.
Yeah.
Granted,
yeah,
it was against the rules, and there probably should have been some sort of punishments, but the sanctions, as you allude to, in my opinion, the idea of like removal of Heisman or vacating of wins is just,
I mean, other teams had done things that are worse. I think Miami had done stuff that was worse. Ohio State's done things that are worse and got a lot less punishment. This seems very punitive to USC.
Right.
The thought is that this is just because NCAA is mad that they have all this access to Hollywood fame and Hollywood, you know, people. That's, they're mad at that. But again, there's no other sports, professional sports team in LA at this time.
Right.
This is LA's football team is the USC Trojans. But I do think about, okay, what if happened? And I think here, what if Lendale White gets that yard? Do we still have these sanctions?
Right.
Does Pete Carroll stick around?
Yeah.
Or does he, you know, does he stay
still go to the NFL?
Does he go to Seattle? Or what could have happened? And obviously, since then, USC's had a long drought. Texas too has, you know, really hasn't gotten back since. And this is kind of
neither team really has gotten back into that upper echelon of college football since this game, which is kind of incredible for these two programs. USC is desperately trying to reach that level of, I think, even just the excitement behind the program of like people being on the sideline and stuff. It hasn't been that draw since the Carroll years, and as we talked about earlier too, like the Bush of that win over Notre Dame, like how that affected even having this matchup. And I think the biggest, craziest what if of this game is that fourth and go from midfield, where, you know, USC was looking at, I still think USC is seen as a dynasty in this era because of how good they were, but to have had that three-peat, to have had that championship, like how does that impact all of the fallout from it? You know, how does that impact Texas to like not have had a championship even further back, but just how this game impacted. It's weird to me that even with this result and these two heavyweights going at it, that it didn't have a positive, it really didn't have a positive impact on either of these programs moving forward.
That's part of the reason why, you know, I want to talk about USC versus Texas. Obviously both schools are in the news right now with your former head coach, Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley, going over to USC, see what he can do over there. And obviously Texas, joining the SEC here soon. So be curious to see, you know, what the trajectory of these different schools go on. It's interesting to go back 15 or so years ago and think about this game and what that, where they could have been 15 years ago and the trajectory they're going on, and really ended right there.
Right.
It was done with the climax. Yeah, this is the climax of this entire game. But really what we didn't know at the time was this was a climax to these two programs, and where really they had, this was the epitome of where they were at. We didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. No one leaves this game or that evening thinking we won't see these guys again. Like, we won't see, obviously, the players themselves moving on, but the programs specifically, like, we wouldn't see Mack Brown back up here again with Texas. We wouldn't see Harrell back up here again with you and back up here. I mean, national championship contenders, you know, really ever again. And what is it, 15 years later, still waiting for these programs to be back at that level. I think it's great to be able to review this game just to give these teams props for what they were, because they were so incredible, and to not let the last 15 years of middling around in kind of the middle rankings of college football detract from what both of these programs were. Texas in this 1 year and USC in this little 3 year span, or this class for USC and specifically under Carroll, just how good they were. But you're right. No one left this game thinking like they both had good runs, like it's over. You know, we thought these were two programs that were here to stay for a while, and they're both still trying to climb back.
Yeah, they're both, you know, it seems like every single year when Texas makes a first down, that first within that first play, they're like, Texas is back. They made a first down, right?
Yeah. So yeah, like, it's a complete joke about Texas. Is Texas back? When will Texas be back? Is it a win against Kansas State? Is it, you know, like when's Texas going to be? It was USC back. I mean, they went and hired Lane Kiffin, but no Heismans have been retracted yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a hope that they be back. And I think it's good for the sport of college football to have Texas to have USC back.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that Lincoln Riley can turn the program at USC around and really
college football is better off when USC is a major contender and Texas is a major contender. Like it is. It just is.
Yeah. And I'd be interested to see what he can do. There's a lot of talent out in the West to see what he can do to bring that back.
To keep some of those guys there. I mean, you look at some of the guys from this year, CJ Stroud, Bryce Young. These are California talent that, to be honest, USC just has not been able to keep in-house or in their backyard. It'll be interesting. That's the biggest thing to me about both of these programs, is the inability to keep some of the top talent from each of their states, from each of their backyards. They're playing for that local homegrown college program. USC's inability to keep these LA stars from going to Ohio State, Bama, LSU, Texas, same, you know, inability to keep guys from going elsewhere. That's the root of why they've not been back to this level since, you know, for the last 15 years.
Yeah. We'll see what happens too. I mean, I'm not thinking that Texas is going to do anything anytime soon. I don't think they're going to be holding my breath in Texas. I think they have a long recovery. We'll see what Lincoln Riley can do. I think the big thing is, what can Lincoln Riley do in SC? What can they, you know?
Yeah, and both of these programs have hired the hot coach over and over and over again over the course of the last decade without any sort of significant result. I think of Texas, Tom Herman, biggest name in college coaching, scoop him up with minimal success. They have Sark now, hottest, you know, assistant coach from a year or so ago. You know, USC goes and grabs, you know, the likes of Lane Kiffin or Clay Helton. Now, you know, once again with Lincoln Riley. And it's just, I understand for these fan bases, they're just waiting to see this return.
Yeah. I'm trying to find it too. When the last time USC was in a big bowl, the
Darnold year.
They were in 2017. I think it's a Darnold year. They lost to Ohio State 24-7.
Yeah.
Before that, it's this game. It's the 2005, the 2006 championship.
Rose Bowl. Rose Bowl. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if we'll ever have this type of win streak ever again, really. I mean, think about just 34 games. It had been over 800 something days, basically two full calendar years, almost three full calendar years since they had lost a game.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll
I'm trying to think even Bama, their dynasty or runs here. I don't know that they've either. They haven't accomplished that. So just that type of dominance is maybe college athletics, college sports is at a different place now where that's becoming, I bring it up a lot, but I think of the Pats dynasty too in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Like this is not a blueprint that's easily duplicated. You know, there's no magic potion or set of events that you can put in place to automatically achieve this type of success. And so kudos to USC for the success achieved in this, you know, in this era, but specifically for this 2006 Rose Bowl game, all the props go to Vince Young and Texas for being the last one standing, really.
I found myself when I was watching this game, I found myself a little bit disappointed that USC didn't win just because of all, because of what that would have meant for this program, all, you know, a three-peat, historical three-peat, which never been done before. So I found myself like, oh man, you know, just, and watching the USC players out in the field, like, man, it's been, you know, they were really talented. I could not believe how talented they were. I don't remember that as much as a, you know, 14, 15 year old kid.
Right.
But
yeah, to look at the same, look back
at the same time, like, wow, Vince Young was incredibly talented.
Yep.
Another part that's interesting too is in this game is, you know, we have all this talent on the college football field there, with the exception of a handful of linemen. Arakpo, I think, is the biggest name that comes to mind in Texas. Nobody really has a good career.
Yeah. Arakpo and Khalil, Ryan Khalil for USC, I know, spent a bunch of years on the offensive line and in the pros. But you're right, for all this firepower and all these legendary college football players, the careers of Leinart, Bush, Young, you know, Lendell White, some of these big stars that just didn't really materialize in the NFL is also a fascinating aftermath of this game, and shouldn't take away from how great of a game this was, which is kind of an unusual that all of these stars on the field and they're left in the, you know,
bust category, really.
Yeah. But I mean, like in the legends of college football, but didn't really do much as far as leaving an imprint on the National Football League.
Yeah. It's kind of like a bunch of Tim Tebow's out there.
Right. Yeah. Tebow's in that category too, which I love it. Like
that's fine. I don't have no problem with that either.
Right.
Yeah. No problem with that whatsoever. I have no problem with
it. Does not detract from these guys as far as college athletes.
No, and they had phenomenal what they accomplished. These were clearly the best teams this year, clearly the best players this year. I think you can make a case that, you know, these were some of the greatest of all times.
These are the references that the announcers make. I think Fouts does. He compares them to Barry Sanders, and he compares them to Walter Payton. He even says he's a mix of Barry Sanders and Walter Payton. Like that's how Reggie Bush was viewed in the college football, because that's how good he was in college.
And deservedly so. And to give you an idea of who he's competing with in college football, Oklahoma had this guy named Adrian Peterson this time too, if I'm not correctly.
Yeah.
So,
this year was stacked.
It wasn't like he was competing against.
Yeah, they had. Incredible. I mean, you mentioned Ohio State, Ted Ginn, Santonio Holmes, Pittman. And Gonzalez, some of these guys that like this. The crazy thing to me about like researching the prior lead up to this game is how this was an incredible year of college football and the teams that were there, and to have these two teams make it through unscathed, undefeated, winning streaks on the line, to duke it out, and then to duke it out in this manner, to have this type of finish, as you said, puts it in the top one of best games ever. And even I would say objectively, like at least like top three, like I have struggled to think of one that stands out in that type of way. And then to couple that with how good the teams that didn't even make it were, or the, how good the field was.
And a couple of the fact that this, the great game and really maybe a couple of them pan out in the NFL.
Yeah. No, none of them. Like I said, none of them really made a huge NFL impact. And like you said, it is a college football game through and through. And the fact that they didn't make much of an impact in the NFL almost makes it more of a college legendary game.
Yeah.
So, it's incredible. If you're 20 years old or younger, go back and rewatch it. Even if you're older than that, and as we bring this up, you remember watching it, it's worth a rewatch for sure. I thoroughly enjoyed rewatching it back through, kind of reliving that adolescence of having watched this in real time as well. And it still holds up. One of the best games to watch of USC versus Texas so much on the line battling it out in this 2006 Rose Bowl.
Yeah, one of the best games I think ever played in on a football field. As long as college football exists, this is going to be talked about as being one of the, this is going to be up there as one of the great games.